to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And it's another bye week.
But not beer week, because you blew beer week early this time.
We have an expert that more than makes up for beer week this week.
That is true. We have a very special guest that Hawkeye Report aficionados, especially the off-topic board folks, are going to enjoy. So,
all right. Well, welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel.
And I'm Tori Brecht.
And we are coming off, hopefully the bye week helped out with the injuries at least, right?
You would think so. You know, I think they said none of the injuries were, you know, super serious. So hopefully we'll be seeing a rested and refreshed team ready to take on Ohio State.
Well, you know, look what Michigan State did coming out of their bye week. I mean, look at the before and after.
This is true.
I mean, can we say, like, you know, can somebody on this Iowa program find a trainer or an equipment manager or somebody in that Spartan locker room and pay them to say, what did you do? what did they do during that week to actually create an offense out of whole cloth?
Yeah, I think they found their offense on the practice field or something. It was either that, or the worst thought is that Iowa's defense is just not as good as we'd hope. But although, you know, the defense didn't play atrociously in that game. It was our lack of offense combined with the terrible special teams that really set that
motion. Yeah, I mean, they were just on the field. I mean, I think we addressed this, was it 2 weeks ago? They're just on the field too long. They, you know, the time of possession was completely out of whack. And they did shut down the run, but they just got eaten up in the pass game.
That's right. But, you know, going into this game, Jim, don't you have to feel that you're talking about teams that are on two entirely different levels?
You do. But, you know, I don't feel the same way about the Ohio State defense. I think we can move the ball against them.
I think we can at times. But will there be any consistency, and will we be able to get into the end zone is the question.
Well, that's the question. And you just see them living, you know, just feasting on big play after big play. And unfortunately, that's kind of how I see that playing out on when they have the ball. So,
well, and I'm terrified of their quarterback. I mean, he is the real deal.
Which one?
Either. It doesn't matter. But Braxton Miller, I mean, he's got a cannon of an arm. I don't think he's as great of a runner necessarily as Terrell Pryor, but he'll abuse you with his feet if he needs to, too. So it's going to be a tough row to hoe.
Yeah, and I'm actually more worried, less worried about, you know, I think we can contain Terrell Pryor. I'm thinking, or Braxton Miller, I think we're more concerned about just him putting the ball within 5 yards of any of their receivers. So I think that the athletic ability and the speed in their receiver core is just, you know, we talked about the secondary being the weakness of this team. And I feel like that they're going to be picking them apart.
Well, in almost every game I can remember with Ohio State, and I'm trying to remember the year with the big night game,
05
that we thought, you know, oh,
was
this
that,
might
that
be
was
a
game
chance.
Day wasn't that
yeah,
game day?
A college game day and a night game. And what I always have in my mind about thinking Ohio State is just like gazelle-like wide receivers just streaking around completely uncovered free through the Iowa secondary, and that's in multiple games going back through history. So, you know, I share that concern big time for this matchup.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that on defense, they, you know, they're probably not as stout as Michigan State, but they don't have to be. I think they hold us to, you know, well, we don't want to get into score predictions too early, but I think they slow us down or just allow us to make mistakes on offense.
Yeah, they'll be the second best defense we play. You know, I said, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that I feel that Michigan State might be a top five, top 10 defense in the country. And I legitimately do. But Ohio State could easily be in the top 25. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think everybody realizes it's long odds. But I did not know this. I did not know that we because we're a 17-point underdog going into Columbus, but we were a 16-point underdog going in there in 2009 with Vandenberg when Stanzi was out.
Right.
And we took them to overtime and lost in overtime, but I did not know that that was slated to be such a uneven competition. I would have given that 09 team, you know, I would have never put them 16 points down, even with Stanzi out.
Yeah, but remember, at the time, Vandenberg, I don't think, had taken anything more than maybe a couple garbage snaps as well, and it was for the Big Ten Championship. So I think that's the Stanzi injury was the – and we lost to Northwestern because of Stanzi going down, and Vandenberg looked terrible. So no one could have predicted, you know, he had that one really good game. So, that and the Pittsburgh game were his two shining moments, I guess. But, you know, that 09 team did have a lot more talent across the board, though, than I think this current team does. Not developed talent, I should say. I think we have some nice talent developing on our team. I just don't think it's there yet.
Agreed. I think this team is a little too young, a little too uneven, a little too much a work in progress. I mean, when you're best defensive lineman is probably Alvis?
Oh, I'd probably say
Davis?
Trinka-Passat. I'd say Trinka-Passat, probably.
Okay, would he have started on that 09 squad?
I don't know.
No. I mean, let's just say no.
Right. So, now, here's something that's interesting, though, when you start talking about numbers and stats. Did you see Scott Dockerman's column this week in the Gazette where I think he, and I'm trying to remember the exact numbers, I think he said 5 out of the last 6 years, Iowa has knocked off a team that ended up in a BCS bowl?
Yeah.
Including Northern Illinois last year. I think there was a Wisconsin BCS team in there once.
He stretched it a little bit. He said a BCS team, and then I think he threw Michigan State going into the Capital One Bowl or something.
Well, regardless, it goes back to what I've been saying, is that we always get that one upset win, it seems like, even when we have poor teams. Now, I don't think it's going to be Ohio State. The way I'm looking at it, Ohio State is a almost for sure loss. Purdue is an almost for sure win. But out of that rest of the games, there's going to be another signature win in there, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Let's transition into the league and how it looks here. We're at the midpoint of the season, it goes so fast, doesn't it?
It really does, and usually I get a little depressed about it, but I bought season basketball tickets this year, so I've got something to look forward to.
Well, no, I mean, I just looked at my sheet of tickets, you know, the ones they mail you, and I'm like, really? Is there only three home games left? And we haven't even had one in October, and I think, you know, we only have one home game in October, and then
here
in November. It just seems weird, but so we're at the midpoint. You know, I think everybody called this, you know, Ohio State's year to it was theirs to lose, and it looks like they're, you know, true to form, and they're living up to the preseason hype. Who else is living up to the hype, and who isn't?
Well, I'd say, you know, Michigan is doing their damnedest to, you know, not bring back the big two little, well, I guess it's what, a little 10 now.
11, 10, 14.
Right. But, you know, I was surprised, you know, first they, you know, you knew it was coming though, because, you know, they struggled against some pretty mediocre teams in UConn and a bad team in Akron. And so, you know, I wasn't shocked that Penn State beat them. But I was a little shocked at how it happened. I think Michigan had three chances to win that game.
Oh, that game was just crazy. And I was watching it, you know, with Penn State's last desperation drive when they passed it all the way down to the half-yard line with 20 seconds left. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And my wife is like, I thought you were going to the grocery store. I'm like, yeah, well, this game won't end.
I'll tell you, I'm a little surprised at how good Wisconsin has handled their transition to a new coach and a new coaching staff. I think it's a credit to the amount of talent that they had on that team. But, you know, they gave Ohio State a good game, and then they went out and just crushed everybody's, the sexy pick of Northwestern being suddenly good, which I never really bought into anyway. So I think Northwestern kind of shot their wad trying to upset Ohio State, and once that didn't happen, things kind of fell apart for him, emotional hangover against Wisconsin. But the Badgers look kind of really good to me.
So Michigan State, I think, is what we thought they were, just a brick wall of a defense with a, well, the offense was, you know, it was on when they came to Iowa City.
And it was on against, who did they play last week? Illinois, was it, that they
No, that was, destroyed? They were in Nebraska. They were in, who did they play? Purdue?
I can't remember now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so they figured out whatever it was, whatever Cheerios they ate during their bye week. I hope we borrowed some of that. Nebraska, I don't know. What are your thoughts? They almost got beat, or they got trounced at home by UCLA. They eked one out against Wyoming, and then they really haven't been in danger since.
You know, I really haven't had a chance to watch them much this year. So, you know, I think Taylor Martinez drives me nuts because he looks like he should never be able to complete a single pass because of his throwing motion, but somehow he does.
But he's been injured, I don't know if he, off and on, I don't know right. if he's, you know, been, if he finished or played the full game last week or.
And from what I've read, anyway, because I haven't watched them that much, their defense is once again a pretty weak.
Yeah, so. Their defense is a wet paper towel.
Yeah. So, you know, it's I think it's Ohio State and then a bunch of
also Rams
middling to poor teams for the most part. I mean, I think Wisconsin and Michigan State are probably pretty good. Penn State, I don't know.
That's a mystery.
They're a mystery team, and they're not very deep either, so they have that yeah. problem. I think Indiana was fool's gold. I don't think people were too surprised by that.
I think they've got an offense. I don't think that, you know, I don't know what else to say about them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they've got a crazy offense. When it's clicking, it works. And when it's not clicking, it's, you know, what we always use to accuse you know, Greg Davis of last year is you can go 3 and out in 12 seconds with that up-tempo offense when it's crap. Mm.
That is true. That is true.
And Purdue is a train wreck.
So. Right. That's oh,
I just made that connection. They are a train.
They are a train wreck. That is wrecked.
Yeah. So. All right. So, and then somewhere in the middle there is Iowa trying to pick up off the mat. And I think we said, you know, that we could have a same or similar record as last year, but be a better team, but mm-hmm. not have much to show for it.
That is the unfortunate truth.
So going forward from here, you know, we're talking, this is the last year with these leaders and legends, and everybody, I think, complained not only just the names were impossible to remember, but the divisions seemed to be kind of wonky. Like people were like, I think the best I ever heard was, for the names of the division is, hey, where's Wisconsin and why is Wisconsin here?
There you go. That's
so
good.
But, you know, and so it's going to make a little more sense next year, divided Big Ten East and Big Ten West. But I have a concern, which is looking at, you know, what propels growth, you know, visibility and the marquee programs or whatever, the, you know, the big stadiums, the big, you know, fan base, the, you know, the national fan base, the big TV markets. And I just feel like the Big Ten West is at a disadvantage.
See, that may be true, but I don't really care because I've gotten kind of to the point with college football now where it's so much the haves and the have-nots and who's willing to kind of bend rules and do this and that. I mean, there's reasons why the SEC is by far so superior that to me, I've tried to kind of scale back my interest to be more about regional battles and rivalries and stuff. So for me, I like it better. I like that we're going to be playing Wisconsin every year, and that's a great road trip. I like having Nebraska, Minnesota, Illinois, you know, our border rivals. And, you know, so I guess from that standpoint, I don't mind it. If you get to the championship game, I think you are still going to be up there and get the notoriety and all that regardless. So that doesn't bother me, I guess, so much.
Well, I'm concerned about the long-term viability if you're just not competitive year in and year out. And I think we saw this, you know, when you started to get, you know, a decade into the Big 12 experiment, right? Is that it was, you know, Nebraska or one of the Kansas schools constantly getting to the championship game and figuring out which Texas school they were going to lose to or which Oklahoma school they were going to lose to. And it just feels like, you know, over time, you know, the TV coverage starts to skew in one direction, and then the recruits start to skew in one direction, and then the, you know, and then the performance on the field starts to skew in one direction. Everything just kind of, you know, it's like gravity, right? It's just the water flows downhill, and all the football success and attention and everything goes with it, starts to flow towards the bigger players. And that's just my concern, is that it's an unbalanced league going forward.
Well, I think there's no doubt, Jim, that you know, Iowa has to pick up their game. You know, Wisconsin has been to, you know, all the Rose Bowls. Nebraska has consistently been winning 9 games a season, which isn't, you know, great or stellar by their
Northwestern count, is a there. Giant killer, I mean, for their size.
Yeah, they're, and so I think the Big Ten historically, at least since the 80s and since Hayden really kind of broke up the hegemony of the Big Two, has done a much better job of having, you know, spreading the talent out a little bit better. I mean, Ohio State's always going to be Ohio State. They're the 800-pound gorilla, and that's just a fact of life. But I don't think that they dominate the actual politics and the running of the conference the way Texas dictates everything in the Big 12, and that's a good thing.
Well, and the revenue share, well, I know some folks probably point to that as, you know, some kind of football socialism, but I think that helps establish some parity so you don't see that just lopsidedness that you saw in the Big 12 when, you know, certain teams would go to certain bowls and just use that to build, you know, these massive, you know, facilities and just continue to reinforce their the advantage that got into the bowl, and it just became this, like, feedback cycle. My concern is that, you know, is that it seems like 100, you know, plus or 50 plus year traditional conference alignments start to look a little shaky the more we add, and that maybe, you know, 10 years down the road, they look at reorganizing those things again. And then people start saying, well, you know, these folks in the Big Ten West, and they don't really have a TV market, you know, outside of Minneapolis and Chicago. It's really kind of, you know, what's next? Omaha, you know, it starts to look a little thin on the ground if you don't have the performance on the field to back it up. So I agree with you that, you know, it's go time, to borrow a famous tagline, but it is go time for Iowa and these middle school and, you know, and Illinois and Northwestern, you know, and Minnesota. Hey, if you're going to have some kind of a comeback to national relevancy, Minnesota, now is the time.
Well, you know, let's not get crazy with asking all of our rivals to get good at the same time. No.
And especially Minnesota, because it's our pig, and exactly. Illinois, because we hate those guys.
Right. So let's bring that talk down a little bit. But big picture, you know, I've been on record as saying I am not at all a fan of this direction we seem to be moving towards, these super conferences or whatever. I mean, I think it already we're going to be watered down by adding Maryland and Rutgers. I don't think they're a great fit for what the Big Ten has always been to me. But maybe I'm just, you know, getting old and curmudgeon-y. I don't know. But
the powers that be see two things, right? They see New York and D.C.
Right. But what I loved always about college football was that it was a regional sport. I always thought that was cool. And that's why I like bowls, because it gave you the chance to see, you know, how is teams from your region match up against teams from another region. And I kind of like the idea. I'm not one that thinks like your season's a failure if you don't win the national championship. I mean, there's like, what, 300 or something college football teams. I like the idea that you can have a successful season and go play a team you normally wouldn't in a bowl and enjoy the win and then chalk it up as, yeah, good season. I don't get the whole there can only be one true champion and we need a 16-team playoff and all that. So I that's not what I liked about college football. That's not what attracted me to it in the beginning, but that's the way it's going.
Yeah, it's you know, it's responding to the money. So but it'll be nice, because even in those down years you get to take a nice little trip maybe to you know, to the East Coast or something and watch a football game. That'll be fun.
That is true.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our we could talk about the money and power that rules the world of college football. All of it pretty much emanating from the SEC and Delaney's office, but we can move on from that and move to our segment called Ich bin Expert. Well, at least I call it Ich bin Expert. I don't know.
But you like it.
I think it's – I crack myself up, you know, every time I say that. But
and really, but that's all that matters.
It is. You know, I tell my wife this. Actually, I had a really good thing with my wife, a conversation with my wife when I said, I know I'm not as funny as I think I am, but I know I'm funnier than you think I am.
That's true.
Yeah, she thought that was relatively clever. So, but anyway, let's move on to our segment where we discuss with an expert. Today's expert is has a staggering knowledge regarding conspiracy theories. And going back, you know, I think even into historical conspiracies and the powers and forces and groups that shape and continue to shape, according to some, continue to shape our world today. So let's go and welcome our guest. So now we move on to our subject or our topic segment, Ich bin Expert. And our expert for this podcast doesn't want us to use his real name, but is famous in certain circles. We'll just say that he is from Ottumwa and now resides in Texas. And I think we'll just call you OIT. Does that sound fair?
Sounds great. Ottumwa in Texas. I like it.
And you got the accent to match. That's the best part. We can always tell whose voice is whose.
When you're from Ottumwa, it doesn't have to go too far south to get a southern accent.
That's what I was going to say. That's kind of that hybrid Missouri-Texas thing twang you got going on there now, right?
And my wife's from Missouri. I had to go to Mizzou to get me a good-looking woman. So anyway, what's on the agenda for this evening?
Well, we wanted to talk to you about, because we believe you're an expert on the subject of conspiracy theories.
Yes, and...
And we know you have just this encyclopedic knowledge of conspiracy theories, and there just seems to be no end to the interesting stories that we can discuss on those.
So how did it start?
Well, it started probably, I'm going to say, with the first Gulf War, early 90s. I started listening to AM radio just to get updates on the war and what's going on, because here I am. You know, my whole life up to that point, I'm in my early 20s, had never had a war to go through, only heard war stories. And so I turned on AM radio, all of a sudden started hearing all these newscasts. And I got acquainted with a guy in Austin named Alex Jones, happened to be around 94-ish, 94, 95. And he started, and I started listening Coast to Coast, several other programs.
Now, was he still local then? I mean, in the early to mid 90s? When did he start to become more of a national figure?
Yes, he was very local. See, like Rush Limbaugh would be on the main channels, like 590 and 1200. So Alex would be on like the 1260 and the 1370, a little off the beaten path. And he would also be on the local TV channels that are like the community channels. What are those called when you have the TV?
Public access.
Cable access. So he started coming up with all this wild stuff that I never even thought of. And Coast to Coast then started, back then it'd be Art Bell before George Norrie. It started getting me introduced to UFOs and possibly, you know, Jesus Christ being an alien, and you know, the wheels in the sky, and you know, there's a light above, and all of a sudden a baby, immaculate conception. So I started opening my mind to this. So what I really thought about when I knew I was coming on here was, how can I tie the Illuminati and the Freemasons in with the Hawkeyes? So we're going to try to do that tonight.
If you can figure out, you know, maybe if somebody put a voodoo hex on the punt return team, I mean, it's as good an explanation as any, I think, at this point.
Was Martin Manley hurt, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah.
How come he wasn't playing?
He was hurt, and Wiseman was hurt as well. So, we had a lot of folks out for a while there.
Well, the only thing I could come up with, okay, also in the mid-90s, I started really following the Hawkeyes, because prior to that, in the 80s, I was racing BMX all over Iowa. I think, is Torby cutting in and out or something?
I'm going to re-add him now. Yeah, he dropped.
I think he dropped. Yeah.
We got him. We'll get him back on here in just a second.
Sorry about that. I had to cough and I tried to cover up the microphone, but I hit the little button on my earbuds for my iPhone and it just started playing music.
Yeah, that's why we edit these things.
Exactly.
Because
I apologize.
You'd think that, you know, after all these episodes, you'd think we would be better at this.
Oh, this is my first time on Skype.
So what do you think of, you know, what makes for a good conspiracy story? What elements have to be in there? Because I know that there were some real conspiracies that never really got attention, like, you know, like the business plot or, you know, like the Tuskegee things that were going on there. Those were real, legitimate, you know, things in history that that were kind of creepy, but no one really talks about them. Instead, they focus on things like JFK and the moon landings and things like that. So what do you think, what elements do you think make for a good conspiracy?
I'd say the number one element has to be that there's a force or a hidden force, a hidden thing that you can feel that's happening behind the scenes. It's like peeling the onion layer back, as they say, and you're finding elements behind the scenes that most people say, no, it can't happen, won't happen, didn't happen, because they're in denial. But there is a force, and so that's why I'm always talking about the matrix of evil. There's always there's a force behind it, and it's usually evil. It's usually got to do with foreign governments, rich people, bankers, Queen of England, things like that, the Vatican. Power and money, it is about power. I have an audience here.
How does the Queen of England? I never quite got that. How does the Queen, the royal family, fit into some of these things?
Well, this goes back to the Illuminati and the Freemasons, because actually the Queen of England thinks that they have the bloodlines of Jesus Christ. Now, if you watch, you know, what's that Monty Python Holy Grail? They actually think they have a grail somewhere with Jesus Christ's blood in it, and they think they're related to him. And so they believe that they are entitled because they're part of, you know, that bloodlines. And
it seems like we could just get Maury Povich to sort this out if they turn over that.
Right. He needs to do the, you know, when genetic they dance, test. When they find out they're not the father.
You're not the father.
It's the wheel in the sky, actually. This goes back to the sun worshiping and the actual pyramids in Egypt. They were worshiping the sun and sun gods and the wheels in the sky. And so what happens is, so you have to have a force that you worship, and this is where the conspiracies start. People say this happened because it's behind the scenes and it just happened. Well, so now we got to prove it. It's a theory. So we have to prove the theory. So that's where the elements come in. So I start digging around, try to prove the theories, and most people do. Alex Jones does. George Norrie has guests on. They have their theories, and they have the good ones actually have proof.
So we have a friend of ours that is also very into conspiracy theories, and he shares your thought on the tie between the Queen of England and the lineage and all that. And I think what he said is that the Revolutionary War was like kind of like a setup or phony or something like that, and that we're actually still part of the British Empire or something. Do you know what that's about, or can you comment
on it? That's what I have posted a few times on A-Trod. That's right. You and I spoke about that before. I'd like to get with your friend sometime.
Oh, you guys would get along really well.
Yeah.
Well, they could get along really well, or maybe like hate each other in an instant. It's hard to tell sometimes, you know. It's like the devil's in the details. But yeah, I think as long as there's beer, everybody gets along.
Well, that's fine, yeah. As long as there's beer and maybe some food. But the Revolutionary War, the Queen of England, they actually sold the United States to themselves. When the Revolutionary War came about, it was a false treaty. It was like a false flag. There never was freedom for us here. They actually deeded it over to England. So we are actually a product of England right now. We are owned by England, and it was actually probably a king, you know, the monarch. king and queen, doesn't matter. So it is, it's definitely, we have been deeded over to England. They fooled the people who signed treaties. Also in World War II, there's a guy who talks about on the ship when they were signing over the World War II treaty that it was actually false. It was under a false flag, the flag flying when they signed the treaty that said World War II had ended. So that was false. So you can go back in time and almost everything that's ever happened after or before any war has not been signed correctly or it's under a false flag. So that's what happens there.
Well, and then go ahead, Jim.
Well, it doesn't help that all of the signatories to most of our major documents were like, you know, huge Masons and or Freemasons and whatever, you know, I mean, I know that was kind of like the country club or Rotary Club of its day, but it still doesn't help when you're trying to, you know, dissuade some of these ideas. And then you look and you're like, well, geez, you know, George Washington gave a secret handshake to Thomas Jefferson and then they exchanged signet rings. And, you know, they were a little kooky back then, weren't they?
Exactly. If you watch there's a documentary called Riddles and Stone. Talks about how D.C. was laid out by the Freemasons in pentagram shapes in the streets and so on. But the Freemasonry comes in when you're building buildings, building cities, building roads. It's kind of like a feng shui type of deal where they're channeling energies. And the other day I was in Tyler, Texas. I ran into Slick Vic from the show Storage Wars, Storage Wars, Texas.
Isn't Drew Tate from there also?
Drew Tate is from down around Bay City, down by Houston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tyler's a little north of there. I think he's from, is he from Bay City or Texas City, down around by Houston? Drew Tate, I have some interesting stories. I thought for a while he was going to go to A&M. Wasn't he going to head to A&M and then he ended up at Iowa?
Yeah, and I know there's something, like, speaking of, here's a Iowa football conspiracy. I think his stepdad was the coach at Clinton High School, just north here of Davenport, and that was kind of his Iowa tie, I think, is how that worked.
Yeah, and he ended up in Houston somehow, or the Houston area, Bay City. But anyway, Slick Vic gave me the gave me the Freemason handshake, and I didn't even realize it until I went back and watched online a couple of his shows, and he was giving people it's kind of a grab the forearm type of deal. Okay.
So the end game, though, the end game OIT, right, of yes. All of this is supposedly to just be setting up this new world order and the one world government or whatever. Why is it taking so long if everybody's working towards it and if they're all so genius at putting together conspiracies?
Well, I think if you look through history, it's happened time and time again. It doesn't really take that long, like 200 years or less. If you look at the fall of the Roman Empire, so the end game is destruction. It's a race to the bottom. So the British empires, they used to own all the, they still do, several of the islands. And you look at the fall of the Roman Empire, and we're currently seeing the fall of the Western Empire, Western civilization. So what happens is it's kind of a peak and up and down, peaks and valleys. So it's ebb and flow. So that's what the end game is, destruction and death and, you know, less people. You would think they would want more people for more taxes, more money coming in, but they want less people.
Well, that doesn't seem to be working out so good.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of death and destruction and wars, and it is depressing. And I was thinking before I came on, do I want to get real depressing on the Hawkeyes? Because, you know, I don't want to be too hypocritical because I go to the games. I went 1,000 miles to go see them debacle with Penn State, and we were all booing. And
that game was terrible. I had a friend of mine who's from South Africa, and he had not got to experience the big-time game atmosphere again. So we got up there early and tailgated, and all of that was awesome. It was a beautiful night. We had a good time. And then from the first whistle, it was just pure crap. I felt terrible.
Oh, man. I think they got down 40-0 or 40-15. It was horrible. And we were booing. And, you know, you hate to boo the guys that are in college and they're young guys and they're trying. But something about it. So last year – I started saying, you know, maybe there's a conspiracy here. Maybe KF is on his way out. We figure maybe he's going to the Chiefs. Maybe he's going to burn the bridges while he's on his way out. Race to the bottom and destruction. And, well, then he's back this year. And the first half of this year, save for the Northern Illinois game, was a pretty good one. Now, the second half, what happens? Do you guys think we win another game or not?
Sure, Purdue.
I'm on record of I predicted 6-6 at the beginning of the year, and I'm sticking with it. They're gonna find one more win out of there because they always beat somebody you don't expect them to. Last year it was Michigan State. It's gonna happen again.
I hope so because 6 wins gets us. They're saying in the Texas Bowl, Dallas or Houston, and I can attend. Well, I don't think I'm.
Then we can come down and have a beer with you.
Oh, definitely. And you got to show me all these wild beers, whatever they are. I'm from Ottumwa, so, you know, Pabst. And we have this beer here in Texas called Pearl. And they call them Yellow Bellies because they're yellow, like the Coors, you know.
There you go.
And Pearl's a good beer, but it moved out of San Antonio, moved up to Dallas area for some reason. Probably corporate nonsense. But anyway, where were we? What's taking so long with them? Well, you could look at diseases, too. It takes a while for diseases to spread, but a lot of them, there might be a conspiracy there.
One of the things I always had trouble with was understanding, like, who benefits from some of these. You know, I think sometimes I lose the handle on that is, you know, okay, so if I've got group A working against group B to control population C, and they're doing all these things, but I'm still struggling with where's the benefit? Is it money? I mean, power is power, but you use power to get other things like money or perpetuity of your lineage or your, you know, your administration or your regime. But it feels like hot sometimes chicks. I lose. Well, and then yeah, the ladies love the love that. But it just finds, you know, sometimes I lose the handle on that stuff.
I understand exactly what you're saying, because if you look at it like that, you think, okay, they want money. Well, they have all the money and riches they could ever want. As a matter of fact, they've ruined the dollar, ruined the money. Okay, so once again, it's race to the bottom, total destruction. So why would you do that? Who benefits? Okay, if you are, let's say, the Queen of England or the Pope in the Vatican, you're one person. Let's say you're Rothschilds, the banker, the banking family. Okay, you want, for some reason, I don't know why, you want to be alone on your island, owning the planet, with nobody else left. You want to be the king. You're it. It's a lot of this Jesus theory. A lot of the pyramids, the wheel in the sky, the light above, you're the light. Lucifer said he's the light in the way Jesus said he is. So what it's all about is narrowing it down to the lowest common denominator. I guess somehow they derive power from being few. The masses have the power. See, if we ever rose up, we could, you know, we could do some damage if everybody in America rose up against this. But they don't want that. They want 5 people in there. So that's where it comes from. I don't get it because we don't think that way, obviously. But
so one of the conspiracy theories that, and maybe it's because I grew up with it, but my mom does not believe that we landed on the moon. And right. I think about that and I'm like, you know, given the technology that they had at the time and the fact that we haven't been back there since and it's like supposedly too impossible now – that does seem kind of crazy because, like, I mean, a transistor radio was kind of like a big deal back then. So, you know, I might be able to buy into that one, the whole soundstage in Arizona or whatever.
Right. Or Houston, down here in Houston with LBJ. See, I think it was all a weapons program, like Star Wars, like Reagan. So it was, let's get up in space so we can shoot back down here, people on Earth. So it's a weapons program now. So LBJ gets all the money possible from the feds, and they're printing the money. The feds are printing the money, and he gets Houston, NASA here. I don't think we did go because of a guy from Iowa. There's another Hawkeye ties, the Van Allen radiation bill. Isn't he a professor? There's a building there. I've walked to Poly Eyes Pizza and walked right by a Van Allen building.
Oh, yeah. Jim and I live near there.
Yep.
Right. Poly Eyes is good. There's another one in Kirksville, and I don't think they're related, but Kirksville, Missouri has a Poly Eyes. Anyway, I digress. But anyway, I do not think that we did go just due to the Van Allen radiation belt. I don't think we had a way possible. And to this day, I don't think we have a way to get through that without getting fried. So that's it. Now, did they – now, Alex Jones and several people have theories that, yes, we did go, but we saw some strange stuff up there. There's supposed to be buildings, other things, and weapons, as a weapon system. So
so I was reading about this, and I actually – this I kind of believe is that there's a conspiracy theory inside of that conspiracy theory, which was that we did go to the moon because we actually had better rocket technology than we did filming technology. And there's some guy on the internet talking about that. It's actually pretty funny to watch. But that it was, and I think this did come out after the Cold War, that the KGB started this disinformation campaign of telling people that we didn't go to the moon, and that they kind of fanned the flames of that. So it's almost like this nested dolls of different conspiracies inside of conspiracies. I don't know if you've heard those.
Right, yeah. What the theory is, we went, and what we saw, or what we did up there, made the weapons bases, built the bases, and so we couldn't show that, so we had to come back here and film in Houston in the soundstage with the Tinker Toys. Alex Jones calls it the Tinker Toy set, and so what happens is, that's your conspiracy inside this conspiracy. You have a cover-up for the actual, what we were actually doing up there, so whatever's up there, there's a guy named Lear who his folks own the Learjet company. He claims the moon was towed there by a big alien spaceship. Somebody tows it over there for reasons unknown. He also claims that once you die, your soul is beamed up there to the moon. There's a 17-mile tower, tall tower that gets your soul.
That sounds boring. I don't want to have my soul in a tower.
Exactly, and in the moon forever, and it's cold and nasty. Mm. So whose mom, again, thinks this, that we didn't go?
My mom thinks that we did not go to the moon, but I don't think she believes in the soul-sucking tower.
We got dogs barking now, so they...
So I have to ask you this, OIT, two-part question. One, about what percentage of your time are you spending kind of researching stuff and reading about it, listening to it? And B, I know you're married and stuff. What does your wife think about this? I don't know if you'd call it a hobby or a world view or whatever that you have. How does she deal with that? Because obviously it's outside the norm.
Well, Mrs. OIT is sitting right here. She rolls her eyes. She doesn't care for it. She does listen to Coast to Coast AM and Alex Jones with me.
She believes in Jesus.
She just said, I believe in Jesus. She comes from more of a religious point of view. So for somebody to not be having this same religious point of view, for her is kind of rough. So amount of time I spend, good grief. It depends on what I'm doing for a living. I've done two basic things, sold life insurance, and I've been a driver for the last 20 years. So I've been a driver and selling life insurance. There's times when I'm in between jobs, so it gives me more time to spend, but it definitely takes up a lot of time.
And post I have on a Hawkeye Report, too. I mean, that's the best part about not working.
Yes, I get 45,000 posts on Hawkeye Report. That takes a lot of time and effort.
You guys are nuts with those 5-digit post counts. I don't know how you do it.
I got a lot of those during the presidential elections, which we won't mention much about today, but also during – I went through a prediction stage, and I predicted the Egypt uprising and Whitney Houston's death. And I started predicting things, and then one guest
came. Well, now, let's be fair. Whitney Houston death. I mean, you really weren't going out on a limb there.
Yeah, well.
One thing.
You know, now you're going to tell me you predicted the Amy Winehouse death, too. I mean, you know.
Well, basically, the Whitney Houston thing was, to be fair, I was predicting a false flag event in Houston, like a bombing or something, and it just happened. To be Whitney Houston instead of that. I was also seeing Rice, so I figured Rice University. I was seeing Rice Patties, and there are rice paddies down in Houston, but it happened in Vietnam that same week to have some kind of problem. So I was predicting stuff going on there, and I was just letting it flow, and whatever came about, came about. And then I heard a guy on Coast to Coast one evening, and he said he had the gift, and he said, if you misuse it, if you don't use it wisely and you disrespect the gift, you're actually doing a disservice. And it really made sense. So I quit predicting stuff after that. And, well, you'll see people on there giving me the business over not getting my predictions correct, but I really haven't been predicting a whole lot lately. So,
we got a prediction for you now, though.
What's that?
Well, we got to put all of our guests on the spot and get you to predict the outcome of the next game, Iowa at Ohio State in Columbus.
With a score.
Most people are looking for a bloodbath. I think Vegas has us as 17-point dogs.
I was going to ask that, 17. I was going to go either 21 or 28 points down. I like this quarterback. I really like him. He reminds me of Tate mixed with Stansy somehow.
Yeah, he reminds me of Matt Rogers. Do you remember Matt Rogers, OIT?
Yes, absolutely remember Matt Rogers. What I was getting ready to say about the early 90s was I really started getting into the Hawkeyes, and, of course, he's Mr. Early 90s, him and Matt Sherman. Got to know a couple Austin guys who played on the team. You probably are aware of these guys. Famous running back, number 5. I got to know his mom.
Cedric Shaw,
my favorite Hawkeye running
Both
back.
Both of us. He's our all-time favorite. Tell him that we really enjoy him.
I will definitely tell Cedric and his mom if I see her. You know, a lot of people get mad at that point of view, too, and they liked Tavian better, but...
Well, Tavian was the local kid from Torrey's high school. I think, Torrey, you were just a couple years ahead of him.
Yeah, I went with his brother. His brother, LaVance, went there, who was a heck of an athlete himself.
Yeah, but we just loved, you know, I think that we loved the way that that Cedric ran hard. You know, he reminded me a little more of, who would we say? Oh, you know, I didn't see his like again until, remember, Jamel Lewis?
Yeah, they were...
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the next time I saw somebody reminded me of the way Cedric ran.
Jermell Lewis. So I'm gonna predict 35-14 roughly is gonna be the score. Maybe even 40-14 in that range. 21-28 points down, 3 touchdowns. It's not pretty because I've watched Ohio State, and when they played Wisconsin, they're pretty good.
yeah, they're a tough team. Well, I have to say this, OIT. I know you mentioned about people giving you business on Hawkeye Report, but what I've always appreciated is you really roll with the punches and take it all in good spirits, and I appreciate that, and that's kind of why we wanted to have you on, because we knew you'd be fun.
No, I appreciate that you noticed. I have not backed down from it. So,
well, what does Torrey's signature say? Something about a little sincerity is a dangerous thing or something like that. I think you can always say you appreciate and you value your sincerity, and I think that's the one thing that people can be on these message boards, and it's the one remaining or the biggest sin you can commit on the internet these days is to be insincere.
And real quick, why I think the Hawkeye connection with the Illuminati and maybe Freemasons, maybe Kinnick. I'm thinking maybe the Freemasons built Kinnick, and when they redid the stadium recently, maybe they just had changed the feng shui of it. So I'm thinking maybe that happened. So we'll see. I'll research that.
You know, that's true. They haven't really had a stellar season since did the Orange Bowl win come after the revamp?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Which one? I mean, yes, but they redid the press box and whatnot in 05 and 06, and the Orange Bowl was 09. But I mean, definitely things have been a little off since they changed the scoreboard and since they we're a little superstitious on this end, OIT.
Good. Yes.
So
we need superstitions. Yeah.
I mean, it's really all Torrey's fault because he writes this big column about how he's turned the program around by finding this old Orange Bowl shirt from 2003, and then he goes and travels for the Michigan State game and forgets to pack the shirt.
Okay, I put it on in the second half. So I'll have you know, every touchdown was scored when I was not wearing a t-shirt. Once I put the t-shirt on, they stopped moving the ball at all. So just saying, maybe its luck had run out.
I drove down for that game. I took off from Austin, Texas. That's a long drive to Miami. I drove down there, no tickets. I scalped some tickets for like $15, surprised the heck out of me. Scalped tickets, and it was a great game, even though we lost. I had a blast. That was 2002 was a magical year. I've heard you guys talk about that on several other podcasts. That was just awesome. Even though we lost, I still had a good time, and I got to see a lot of stuff in Miami and, you know, North Destin, Florida, and got to see Tallahassee. So I had a good time. There was a band in Tallahassee in a bar. It's like a three-piece band with stand-up bass playing AC/DC, so I thought that was pretty good.
Well, thanks for your time, and thanks for you know, kind of expanding our horizons a little bit.
I appreciate it. Hope I've lived up to the OIT reputation.
I think the legend lives on.
Legend. And of course, you know, superstition is kind of a gateway drug to conspiracies. So at this time next year, Jim and I might be full bore into it too.
Well, speaking of Masons, you know, I used to go, I told you my problem is I used to go and hit that 1929 cornerstone at Kinnick that was laid out down there, and I haven't been doing that. So
is it still there?
I think I pissed off some spirits of some Masons or something.
Those bathrooms under that south? Oh my goodness, we've talked about that on H-Rot several times. The bathrooms over by the old tennis courts was just like nuclear bomb went off in there.
I think it was a nacho bomb.
Those are horrible. I'm glad those are gone.
Well, Jim, you need to start touching the cornerstone again and get things going. Well, you need to get the punt block corners going back again. Exactly. Maybe we're not doing our part.
Exactly. We're letting the team down. So, all right. Well, thank you. And, we'll hopefully your prediction on this particular case is completely off and something really, really strange happens. And then we can talk about the conspiracy that against having a Big Ten BCS contender, and that was why Iowa was allowed to beat OSU.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only way Iowa's going to win is if there's a conspiracy theory to make it happen.
I will take it.
Well, that's one conspiracy I didn't touch on. I think there's a soft tyranny going on right now where SEC takes over the college football world, which this isn't too much of a stretch if you look around. You know,
no conspiracy. You don't have to sell me on that one.
I think that's just straight cash money, homie.
That's the cash, and that's the oversigning, and that's a done deal.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm an Aggie fan, and I really liked them better under the Big 12 than the SEC. It's just my opinion, but I thought it was more a homey feel, played UT, played the Texas teams. Now they're SEC, it just doesn't seem right with the Aggies. But
and you didn't have to cheat as much. Now you have to cheat more.
Oh, yeah. There's the other one I was going to bring up was Ronnie Harmon and stuff.
Oh, boy.
Maybe that's for another time.
That's for another time. That's a third rail Hawkeye conversation right there.
That gets people's blood. That gets the fur messed up a little bit. Yeah, people get a little animated when you talk about Ronnie Harmon and the Rose Bowl.
Definitely. And the Bills fans do, too, by the way. I'm a Bills fan and a Bears fan. The Bills are not thrilled with Ronnie Harmon. After he left Iowa, he decided to drop a few passes for them, fumble. So, anyway, the Bills always give me crap over that. So.
Lovely. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on. We'll hopefully run into each other down the road, maybe in Texas for a bowl game. That'd be great.
Definitely. We'll keep in touch. You guys come down. We'll drink a beer.
Great.
Sounds great.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Well, that was interesting to talk to OIT. I mean, I've only read some of his things. I never got a chance to speak to him before. Interesting guy.
And you know what I find interesting is that he is generally quite chipper, but he has a pretty bleak worldview. So I find that to be kind of a interesting dichotomy.
He's very upbeat when talking about dark subjects. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess. You know.
And that makes you question, like, how deeply does he actually believe it all?
Oh, I don't doubt his sincerity.
I don't doubt his sincerity either. I'm just saying, like, subconsciously. But this is me being an armchair.
Of course, I would say that if there were, and this is where I kind of start to my gears start to turn a little bit, is if there were some sort of overarching conspiracy, wouldn't they have accounted for and actually created and seeded these conspiracy theories and the advocates like Alex Jones and our guest to kind of just to throw us off the scent?
Well, and to make them seem even more outlandish than they actually are. So you take the kernel of truth,
right,
then blow it up to be even to sound quote unquote crazy so that it's automatically dismissed so that rational, smart people don't look at it.
Oh, that sounds like that's a conspiracy right there.
Yeah, we totally figured it out.
We've cracked the code. Well, and one of the things, like, I was struck by how some conspiracies don't attract any attention at all, but really should. You know, right. I think there was this thing where they, you know, the some banking regulators, some international banking regulators figured out that some folks were manipulating the after-hours interest rates that banks charge each other for something called LIBOR, right? And it's this London interbank, I don't even know what it is, but it's this, like, this tiny little fractions of a percentage of the banks that are loaning each other trillions of dollars overnight, you know? And they're making just dump truck loads full of electronic money on this stuff, and they're all together, and it's all a bit rigged, and nobody's talking about it, and nobody's going to jail. And I'm like, now there's a conspiracy theory worth investigating.
Well, and Oliver Stone had this show on HBO not too long ago that you know, had a lot of, you know, I mean, he had quotes and footage and all kinds of stuff on some of the thoughts on conspiracies that he had too, that was pretty interesting. So it's always fun to talk about, but my thing though, just in generally about conspiracies though, is that I'm always amused that a lot of the people that believe in conspiracies also believe that government is like fundamentally incompetent. And so I've never understood how you can have it both ways. Like, if you're so ingenious that you can have this, you know, super intense, secretive conspiracy that nobody figures out, but you're also incompetent. It can't be both.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also believe that the more people that are involved or the bigger something gets, the more difficult, it's just like infinitely, exponentially harder to keep it a secret. So that when you have two people, maybe they can keep a secret. Three, maybe, you know, four people can hide a body or whatever. Five people can, you know, cover up a crime. But when you get to things that require dozens or hundreds of people, I think, you know, eventually somebody's gonna do some pillow talk, or they're gonna spill the beans over a beer somewhere or something like that. It just seems like it's too vulnerable. I mean, look at what happened to Walter White.
There you go. Well, where do you think Alex Jones is getting his information, though, Jim?
All right. Well, I guess that leaves us with our predictions. Our guest predicted 40-14 beatdown of Iowa. I think we have been calling this one a loss since the beginning of the season. So, who has to go first this time? You?
I think it's me this time.
All right. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, I think we're going to look like we can move the ball a little bit better this game, like you said earlier. I just have these visions, though, of receivers running wild and free again. So I think Ohio State's going to put up quite a few points. My prediction officially is 31-16 with Ohio State coming out the victor.
Okay, so, but we cover the spread.
Barely.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So I'm thinking we cover the spread too, and I think we're in the range of 42-28.
Oh, that's a lot of points, Jim.
Yeah, I do think that we can run on these guys a little, and I do think that we are going to be able to, like you said, move the ball a little bit better, and I gotta believe that our offensive production is not going to, you know, bottomed out against Michigan State.
I actually think we're going to move the ball through the air, because Wisconsin did not actually, and they're an awesome running team. They couldn't get much going in the running game, but they got some nice passing yards against them at the Aberdera. So I think.
But I also think that some of those touchdowns come in mop up time when we're facing their second team. Of course, their second team is Kenny Guyton.
I have a feeling that Rudick is going to look good in this game. So he's sort of my pick to click, I guess.
Well, let's, you know, I think the best thing that we can hope for here, I mean, aside from a miraculous upset, I mean, we can say we want to look good. We want to make sure we give them a four-quarter game. No injuries, I think, is the key. And, you know, set things up nicely and see some improvement when we host Northwestern the week after that.
Agreed.
All right, with that, we'll just say on Iowa.
And go Hawks.